Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome to another episode of Tin Foil Hat. We had a little bit of some technical difficulties, but we are back on track. Thank you guys for joining us. We appreciate all your love and support. The show's growing, and it's all because of you guys helping spread the word, man. A lot of amazing things are going on at this show, and we appreciate you. Joining me as always is XG and the place to be.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah, dog. You guys like XG? Everybody likes XG. You like him so much. Bam! New Jersey! He's coming! That's right.
Bang.
March 16th. We sold out the first show. The second show's there, dude.
Tiffany Grill and L House.
Yeah, Tiff Grill and L House. I'll tell you what I'm not playing is a Chuckle Shack. So we got that. Boom, it's there. XG's coming out. We put it together. We're making it happen. So you can see XG crush for 10 minutes, right? You got 10 minutes. You got 10 yet?
Yeah, I'll figure it out.
Okay,
we're good.
What I always love is watching Mexican comedians go to like the Northeast or Canada when they've never met a Mexican and see how that works out. So it's going to be fun to see XG on the road using his kung fu in front of the fans. So go grab those tickets. All the links are available on samtripoli.com. Okay. This show is made possible by a couple people who help us out. Our sponsors, I want to thank, check out cavemancoffee.com. Caveman Coffee. For all your coffee needs, you like working out, you like keeping it natural, Caveman Coffee does that, okay? Are you tired of big corporations doing it? Help out the little man, dude. They got everything. They got nitro. They got teas. They got everything. Anything that's legal, they got it. And they're our good friends. They're sponsoring the show. They sponsor Comedy Chaos as well. Just use the promo code TINFOILHAT. And they'll hook you up and get super caffeinated. Everybody thinks I'm coming down with either MS or Parkinson's or some shit. No, I'm coming in here fucking gacked out of my mind on coffee. I drink so much coffee. My girlfriend's
like, you snort it.
Yeah, dude, I'm waiting for them to do snortable Red Bull. I'd love to do that. As a guy who used to love Coke, I'd love to snort some Red Bull, dude. My girlfriend asked me today, you want more coffee? I go, you never have to ask that again. The answer is, yes, I want more coffee. I don't care if I'm about to go to bed. Give me some coffee, dog. I am a coffeeholic, okay? So I love Caveman Coffee, and I appreciate them sponsoring the show. Also, as well, I want to give it up for our new sponsors who just started this week, our good friends at abx.org. That's Absolute Extracts, one of the premier weed companies in the world, man. In the world, they are literally the Nike and the Adidas of weed. They're going next level. Look at that.
Right here, man.
Where'd you get that? My show. Holla at your boy. That's what we do. They load it up.
I say it. Look.
Look at that,
look
Aaron.
At that.
He just smoked weed in the studio. Guess what you can do about nothing. Nothing, Aaron.
Yeah, but they show you how to do it on the website, how to and everything, since it's
great,
legal
dude.
Now. Yeah.
They got everything,
fuck.
Dude. They got like ointments for your vagina. Dude, do you just rub it on there, do a little DJing, and it's just a happy vagina? You right? What do you do when you get high? Bam, you want to eat,
ooh,
right?
Tell them about the new shit they had with Lagunitas, the beer.
Yeah, they got weed beer, dude. They got weed beer. Now you can get drunk and high. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, it's called High Hef Hops or some shit like that. And
High Hops?
Yeah.
Hi-fi. It's hi-fi. We don't even know. The point is it's magic. I'm not trying to win a spelling bee here. I'm trying to promote a product that makes everybody feel better about themselves. Get high on weed, dude. And they got weed water, bro. My buddy was trying to do that a long time ago. Weed water. But I'm like, we already have it. It's bong water. And boom, they made that taste good. Old bong water tastes like robot asshole, right? But not this stuff. This is good. That's what you need, right? So go to our friends. Go to abx.org. Use the promo code TINFOILHAT. And they will take care of you there, dude. They will they got everything. Gel caps, ABX cartridges, beverage lines. You name it, dude. These guys got down to a science. Right? You got to support these guys and not the Monsanto's assholes who are going to be loading up on, like, Monsanto's weed.
They have cannabis strips.
They have cannabis strips. They have anal bleaching. They have cannabis anal bleaching, dude. Are you tired of your brown eye? You want to turn a blue eye? Bam! ABX.org. Get that shit. Hook it up. Drop. I mean, dude, it's next line. It's so amazing. It's so amazing what they're doing, dude. It's a wonderful time to be alive. And okay, we got t-shirts as well.
Yeah, we got them right here. The Raiders one.
The Raiders
the
one.
Sam
Go
Raiders.
To tinfoilhatpodcast.com. Every month, we put a brand new shirt up. Oh, we got hoodies now. We got everything, dude. Dude, wait till you guys see the new shirt coming out. The fucking Suicided Squad. You guys are going to love that shit. It's going to be next level. So we're doing that. Go to that. And what else we got to push? Patreon as well. It's killing it. The children can't stop talking about the number one internet show, which is Conspiracy Now. Conspiracy Now. It's on the Patreon. It's me basically interviewing your favorite conspiracy theorists or comics who are into conspiracies. And it's super janky. And it's down in the belly room, the basement of the Comedy Store. So that's there. And what else we got?
Your new podcast, man. The quick one. It's quick. It's quick.
Have you listened to it?
It's like if you're taking a shit. Yeah. Just a quick one.
The new podcast, Kids Can't Stop Talking About This, is by Chad. It's basically my conversation with Chad Zumach on the forum. And see how long I can go before I hang up on this crazy guy.
Dude, I would have hang up on you. Every time he hangs up on you, I was like, I would have done that at least 5 minutes ago. Yeah. I saw him like, oh, dude, he pushes it.
Chad has been in L.A. for 9 days. He's already pissed off Neil Brennan. Neil Brennan sent him a text going, I'm done with you. 9 days he's been here. 9 days. He has not gotten to 2 weeks, and he's burning bridges already. So it's a great podcast. Let's do it. Put it by Chad. I'm trying to get it on Google Play. It's been a struggle so far. Enough of that. I'm already fucking 10 minutes into this shit, and I'm already yelling at people. Super excited to have our next guest on. He appeared on our show, and everybody couldn't stop talking about it. They loved it. You know, people said, this is how you know Sam's not a gay Jew shill. He had his next guest on. He spits the truth. And I appreciate that. But it's amazing how I get no credit. I'll do one thing. Everyone's like, great show ever. Put out the next one. This show's going to shit.
Yeah.
Everyone. So I have to have this guest on at least 5 times a month to keep anybody from believing this is a real show. Please welcome back to the show, Ryan Dawson, everybody. How are you, dude?
I'm good. You know, back when you were having technical difficulties, you channeled your inner Bill Riley. I was wondering if you could do that for everybody again.
We'll do it live.
There's
we'll
no words
live.
Here. Fuck it.
We'll go live. We couldn't get the track to play. I got to take care of that. Yeah. Occasionally it gets janky here, and I get caveman fast. I will Hulk smash shit in 2 seconds.
I mean, it's the coffee.
Yeah.
Caveman, man.
Yeah, I
got you going crazy, man.
Hey, do you not want to do meth? Good. Don't do it. Drink caveman coffee. It's legal, dog. I just threw the campaign right there.
Fuck it.
Right? Ryan, what is the weed situation in Japan?
It's very much anti-weed here.
What's your thoughts on that?
I'm all for legalization. I was just thinking, like, I don't personally do drugs, but I don't see why any adult can't have a plant if they want to. And, like, my sister grows marijuana in Colorado. So, yeah, I was thinking during your advertisement, I said, wow, they legalized weed and the free market has spit out all these products. You know, I just thought that was wonderful.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I love that you're a conspiracy theorist in Japan and your sister is a weed grower. Like, your parents did a great job, dude. They did a great job. They put out some wonderful people.
And my twin brother does comedy.
Oh, that's great. Where's he?
North Carlina.
Well, if he's ever out here, let's get him on the show. Let's promote that shit. We got the
dude, you should have him on the show, if not for comedy, but to talk about the Lost Colony someday. He's an archaeologist too.
Done.
He does comedy for money. He gets a degree. He's really smart. Can do archaeology, but yeah. You know.
Chicks don't want to fuck dudes who know where fossils are. That's what I've learned, right? You got to make that money. They want to go, ha-ha, or they want to... It's a sad day that... What's his name? Telesto? Who's that guy? Who basically plays, like,
Tiesto.
Yeah, that guy?
Yeah, Tiesto.
And
the
he
DJ.
Plays at Coliseum. And you know all he's doing is just play next song. But he's always looking weird. And it's all because white chicks like ecstasy and just want to numb out. Right?
Yeah, that's what it's all about, man. Have you been to one?
Dude,
you ever been to like a crazy
dude, I stopped going to raves when people started thinking I was security and asking me where the bathroom was. That's when my party days were done. I'm like, nope, I'm out. Everyone thinks I'm the fucking popo.
Wait up, did you wear the candy?
No.
You didn't wear all that shit people wear?
No, dude.
I said, I can't see you with that candy and then that plur where you
no,
hold each other's hand.
No, none of that
hand.
Shit, dude. We just hung out, talked about God and ate butt. That's what we used to do back in the day. Ryan, I'm glad you're here. When I do these episodes, I want to do episodes that counter the mainstream media narrative. And one thing we've been seeing a lot about is if we pull out of all these places, ISIS is going to take over. And what these people who freak out about that don't realize is that we pay the checks of ISIS. They are on the payroll, and we created them, and we are, and they wouldn't grow if we stopped paying their bills. And that's what I want to get into. So whenever anybody brings this up, I want them to be able to share the show and go, dude, ISIS isn't the problem. Us funding terrorism is the problem. And we'll get into that. So, Ryan, where do we start with this? Can we start early? Obviously, everybody knows Al-Qaeda, that we basically funded Al-Qaeda, created Al-Qaeda as a counter to Russia in Afghanistan. We created them so that we would draw Russia in and they would weaken the union. That's what we've been told, that we would weaken the Russians' military, their government, because they would be stuck in Afghanistan. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it started slightly earlier than that with this clique called the Safari Club. After the Yom Kippur War in 1973, the U.S. realized, okay, the Arab states, they don't have us technologically, they don't have the military, but what they did have was the oil weapon, and OPEC proved that by putting the U.S. in gas lines for withholding oil because they were angry that the U.S. sided with the Israelis in Yom Kippur. Nixon gave them so more weapons than what the Israelis had themselves. So to break up that cartel, George Bush Sr., who was the DCI of the CIA, decided to make a relationship with the Saudis because they had the largest oil reserves in the world until Venezuela surpassed them, but certainly in the Middle East. So if you have Saudi Arabia, then the OPEC oil weapon doesn't work. So he brought them into the fray. There was already a contingency between Israel and the United States ever since the Kennedy assassination, and I'll skip that can of worms. So you had Saudi Arabia, Israel,
we're
going to
do that episode, Ryan. We're going to do that episode.
We will. I don't mind talking about it, but I'll never get to Syria if I get into JFK.
Yeah. We'll get into that because I love your discussion as well. But keep going on. So we got this.
So you got this shared intelligence nexus, and they really needed that. They really needed linguists. The CIA, without the Israelis and without the Saudis, they really don't have a lot of Arabic and Farsi speakers. The Saudis did, though. And the Saudi royal family is really what we're talking about. It's very, very, very centralized in Saudi Arabia. A lot of the people can't stand it, but they have a theocracy, a Sunni theocracy, and a lot of their diaspora is who flooded into Afghanistan to join the fight and join the Mujahideen. And a little the foreign fighter clique within the Mujahideen is what we started calling the base, like the database of foreign fighters, which is Al-Qaeda. And back then, by now Reagan was president in 1980, they'll have Reagan's freedom fighters is what they used to call them when they're fighting the Soviets. But they're making a Frankenstein because they're allowing these madrasas that are preaching this very fundamentalist Wahhabi Islam under the Sunni sect. Not all Sunnis. It's like a subgroup of Sunnis, kind of like evangelicals or something, or
right.
Crusaders.
Like they're the extremes of them, like the more extreme hardliners.
Mm-hmm. But most importantly, it has a large financial backbone through several different banks for money laundering and gun smuggling that intelligence agencies provided them with. They didn't do this organically or by themselves. They're getting money and weapons from states. We're not getting it from the governments, not the Knesset or the Congress or that were approving this. This is all done underground by the CIA, by the Mossad, by the GID, which is like the Saudi CIA. That's who started this. And BCCI was one of the central banking hubs that they used to launder money around these foreign fighters. And then they were angry during the first Gulf War when the U.S. occupied the Holy Lands in Saudi Arabia. Babies on incubators, Iraq One happens. Y'all know all that. We'll just fast forward on up.
But I want to get into the fact that you said something very interesting, and that is like that the CIA is basically the ones who work with Mossad, which is Israeli version of CIA, to funnel these guns. And basically what I'm coming to grips with is that the CIA is not really United States intelligence. The CIA is more like the law enforcement arm of the international bankers and the UN. Basically, they do the work or the bidding of people outside our country and our government. What some people would call the shadow government, right?
Yes, there's it used to be the CIA originally is from the OSS out of World War II, and they're supposed to be kept in check because the government holds the purse strings. They can withhold money from the CIA. But with the CIA found another way to make money for all their off-the-book operations, and that's the global narcotics trade.
Yes.
And so when they say the war on drugs, that's BS, because the CIA is the greatest facilitator of the flow of drugs on Earth, bigger than any gang.
For sure, man.
And that's – I mean, they've been caught with planes full of cocaine and – and just, I guess I skipped this. There's this thing in the 80s called Iran-Contra, and that's where Israel and the United States illegally sent contraband to Iran. And at the same time, they also allowed narcotics flow from Nicaragua and Colombia to places like New Orleans and Los Angeles and Miami.
And Arkansas was a big one. Arkansas. No, everybody thought it was coming
through. Arkansas is where they trained the pilots to deliver all this stuff. And yeah. Bill Clinton was a willing participant in that. That is a long can of worms as well. We can do a show on Iran-Contra anytime as well. So, but the point is, this one of the most important trades is opium. I used to call Vietnam the war of helicopters and heroin. And Afghanistan is where a lot of opium is located. And so the reason we've had this little tertiary force in Afghanistan is just to for 18 years now, is to facilitate the flow of opium. The Taliban turned it off.
Yes, dude. People don't realize that. The Taliban burnt the poppy fields. And that's why they
look at the flow. You can look at the graph. In 2001, July, there's almost minimal. They can't stop all of it, but it dropped 99%.
Now,
and the CIA didn't like that, but they can't openly come out and say, hey, wait, we're supposed to sell drugs. They can't say that publicly.
Well, dude, and so you also look at Obama, and that story was crushed hard. But there's some belief that Obama pulled the DEA off of investigating whether Hezbollah was selling drugs in the United States and shipping the money back in cars, which is my whole theory on, is that Nicolas Cage is trying to warn us of everything in his movies. Gone in 60 Seconds is about
Time Traveler.
Yeah, no, it's about how fucking they're stealing cars. Well, what happened was the Juan brothers, that scandal went fucking away, were basically money laundering through these cars. They would sell these cars back to the Middle East, and they were full of cash that they believe Hezbollah was making off of selling drugs in the United States, and that Obama pulled them off of the DA from investigating them. And nobody ever talks about that. You know? It's crazy. Yeah, so let's go back to these guys. We're in Afghanistan.
The Mafia actually did it, that from Detroit to New York, they would pack cars with heroin and send them back with cash.
Yeah.
That was a real scandal with the Giovesi syndicate. Hezbollah really doesn't have the power to protract all the way across the sea and sell drugs. They make a lot of their money through religious donations and so forth. I mean, that's another side tangent too, because I got to get into Syria. So we've established basically these intelligence agencies that act quasi-independently, or at least with plausible deniability, so the government can say, "Oh, they did that. It's not us." There's a layer of distance, so they're not held responsible for everything the CIA or the Mossad or KGB or et cetera does. And they allow this. And a lot of presidents kind of look the other way or feign ignorance. Oh, I didn't know that, or that's all the CIA. And the CIA, of course, is able to fund this without having to go to Congress because they have this giant global narcotics budget. That's why the war on drugs is so important. Not just to you know, for why I support drug legalization is because, one, I think the black markets make it worse. But I understand that the biggest purveyor of violence and terrorism, the way they finance that is through the illegal drug trade. And you would yank the rug right out from under that if you legalized it.
For sure, dude. For sure, man. I mean, like, dude, all the money it's made, that's my opinion on prostitution, dude. You would clean all that up. There'd be very little sex trafficking if it was something that you could just get licensed for. You take the danger out of it. But there's so much money in the illegal trafficking of it that they would never do that. The people who are trafficking it are the ones who are supposed to be fighting it. You know, like DynCorp has been busted doing a lot of this shit. They're right on in it, man. Like
DynCorp's raped its own employees. Drugged and raped. I mean, look up that story. DynCorp employees raped.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and that's, this all happens as an outgrowth of war. I mean, the rise of gambling, prostitution, and narcotics across Europe and Japan was a result of World War II. You had cities blown up and, you know, decimated economies. And what do people do who are completely desperate? Well, guys sell drugs and girls sell their bodies. So you just quadrupled the market for prostitutes and drugs. And if you keep it illegal, you end up with the sex slavery and the exploitation. When you legalize it, that's something Japan does have legal prostitution. And they had to find some way. You get a lot of these desperate Chinese girls. This is when they're fleeing communist China. Don't speak the language, going wherever, and they were selling their bodies. The only way they felt they could clean that up, or the only successful way, is they just went ahead and legalized it and were able to, so that people could get help and not have the threat of jail. And that's better than making it go underground.
Yeah,
so
it's ridiculous. If everybody loves capitalism, well, what's more capitalistic than a guy with $500 and a girl needing to pay a rent? And that's supply meets demand. And if you, you know, if you have and the whole argument is like married guys cheat on their wives. Fine, but I mean, adultery isn't illegal, right? I mean, it might be in a couple weirdo states, but for the most part, it's not illegal. I mean, you can't even, in California, you can't even use it as a reason to
get a divorce.
Get divorced.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, a lot of them aren't trying to pay their rent. A lot of the prostitutes here are very wealthy. They just, the reason they do it is because they would rather make a few hundred dollars in a few minutes than they would sit in a cubicle all day.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's very hard for a young girl to stop prostitution. She could work one day or 2 days a week and make enough money and not have to do anything the rest of the week.
And she gets laid.
And it's a choice. And if they want to do that and they don't mind, and they get to choose who they, you know, mess with. So I, you know, I'm all for laws off my body, hands off my wallet. You know, that's, I'm a libertarian.
Yeah.
You don't have to endorse an activity to allow other people to do it.
Yeah, you know, it's so. Your options. You know, that's the options that are out there. So we're back to the drug war and where that is at. Now, we are in Iraq, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the start of the birth of ISIS comes from when Brimmer, or John, is it Brimmer? John Brimmer III, goes in and I don't know if this is a colossal mistake or a calculated move, but he basically gets rid of a calculated move, gets rid of the entire Sunni, is it Sunni, government that is controlling Iraq. And when they say you overthrow, when you do regime change, you only cut the head off. You leave the body there, so the structure's there, and you install a new guy as the head of the beast. And Brimmer didn't do that. He got rid of the entire thing, and that created chaos.
Well, he fired the Republican Guard and stopped paying their salaries. So these trained professional soldiers become the leadership of the rebellion. And you had Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is ISIS. They even were trying to declare an Islamic State in Iraq. And this, you know, this is all from George Bush the Lesser coming in and playing into identity politics in the Middle East and handing Iraq over to the Shia, which is an Iran-backed faction, at the expense of the Sunni and the Kurds. And so this blows up, and this is all predictable. And this is exactly what the Israeli strategy papers wrote about, called Oded Yanan used to write about it, saying they wanted to balkanize Iraq into sectarian infighting. And that's exactly what they did. And this had predictable consequences. So they went in bed with Chalabi, who is a bank fraudster in Iran. And
yeah.
And he got Judith Miller and William Safire to reiterate lies from PNAC and the Lockheed Martin Finance Weekly Standard in order to invade
Who
Iraq.
Was that
we went
guy?
Over that last time.
What? Can you tell me a little bit more about that guy? That, I mean, like a giant fraud dude. And what we're finding is like these, they use these fraud lies to get, and like we don't find out till later how much of a lie this is. This is no different than what's going on with Russian collusion. You know,
yep.
I mean, we're finding more and more, like, every part of that story's bullshit. You know, it wasn't even the Russians that gave them that. It was now the Ukrainians that gave them all the fake info for the dossier, gave Steele the... It was none of that. Everyone goes, nothing in the dossier has been unproven. Nothing's been proven to be true. They haven't proved anything.
It's all partisan. Like, they hear what they want. And it doesn't evidence be damned. Like, there's no Russian collusion or a hacking of our elections. They just can't understand that Hillary Clinton was more than capable of losing that election by herself.
Yeah, I mean, she stole her own primary. If you can't win your own party, what chance do you have at winning the general? None. And if she only got New York and she only got California, I mean, she got a couple other states, but those are the states that give her the big numbers. It was like, she got Yeah, she won New York and California. And California, we don't even know she really even won it. Like, they were already some shady shit going on in California. I know it's a blue state, so she was going to...
To win anyways, but it doesn't matter. It shouldn't have been her.
She fucking... The primary was such a jacking of it, dude.
But she ripped off Sanders, and... As bad as Trump is, Hillary would have been a lot worse. And I said the same thing about Obama. As bad as he was, McCain would have been way worse. You know,
right,
so.
Right. And but they're also, I mean, like, I think McCain was used to get Obama in. You're like, what do you want? Charismatic young black guy or fucking Satan that's walking around decaying? Yeah. Like, that's all done on purpose.
They sabotage Ron Paul for sure. They wouldn't even let him speak sometimes. Like, so... The primaries, yeah, it's voting's about damage control.
Yeah,
you don't really, very, very rarely do you have someone who you can vote for, and if you can, they're not going to count most of the votes. So, it's not completely rigged, but there is a lot of shenanigans and cheating going on. That's been the case for many, many decades.
That's been forever, dude. You know, and so we go in Iraq under lies, complete utter bullshit lies put out by Dick Cheney and his whole crew, and I love how they act like they were just looking for you know, weapons of mass destruction, and they, you know, they just couldn't find it. And Dick Cheney said, "Look more," and it's like they didn't. Gary Trent, is that his name? The fucking head of these.
Or Donald Rumsfeld. We know where they are. They're north, southwest, east, southwest, and north of Detroit. Yeah. You know?
And then I just
somewhere around there.
I watch people come up with ways to explain. Why they haven't found... Oh, they have an underground network that gets all... Dude, you're lying, dog.
They have WMDs and got invaded and didn't use them, right? Like, they just have them so they could get invaded, but they're not going to use them to protect themselves. It makes a lot of sense.
It's complete bullshit.
Best lie about WMDs, like, post-war was Judith Miller saying Iraq sent them to Syria. Like, Syria is going to go, oh, yeah, these just got your country invaded. We'll hold them for you. You know?
And just people buy into the bullshit. They'll believe anything about a boogeyman. It doesn't matter. And they don't care how wrong it is, too.
Three of the central liars were Michael Ledeen of Iran-Contra fame, Paul Wolfowitz of Iran-Contra fame. You notice a trend here.
Yeah.
And Elliot Abrams, also of Iran-Contra fame. And these are the same guys that are saying we should invade Venezuela right now.
I don't understand how people are not going, nah, dude, we just did this. We trusted you, and you lied to our faces.
We're not going to invade Venezuela. Like, it's just John Bolton and them talk. He's another one.
You don't John think Bolton, going things are going to go down there?
We're not going to go into Venezuela.
You don't think so? Or we're not going to fuck with them and just bring? I mean, like, word is that we're sending our military.
Oh, we've been fucking with them. That'll have that. But we're not going to do a hot style military invasion. That won't happen. As John Bolton said, we're not going to talk to Korea. We still did. He said,
why is that guy still walking around?
But we are. And the Pentagon came out and said, John Bolton doesn't speak for us. That's a big backhand to the face.
Okay, I'm going to get it.
The only reason he's there is Sheldon Adelson paid enough money to put him there. But nobody listens to him.
I hate John Bolton. He's just an agent of chaos, dude. He's just an agent of chaos. If what you're saying is true, and I have no reason not to believe it, then he's just there to make everybody think it's chaos time.
It could be kind of like, well, we put a few crazies in there, so our threats really scared hell out of people when John Bolton says it. But the Pentagon, the military brass, and the president don't agree with their national security advisor. So, you know, Venezuela's got enough problems on its own without threats from the outside, but I really don't think we're actually going to invade Venezuela. There is a slight possibility of trying to push Colombia into it, but I don't see that one happening. So
you already can't buy tickets there.
You can't fly to Venezuela?
Yeah, Expedia and Orbit or whatever. Orbits are no more. No more tickets to go there.
Kayak will take care of you, bro. You want to go to Venezuela? Get on Kayak. Kayak.com. Use the promo code TinFoilHat and go there and get shot. Have a good time. So we have this thing. We get rid of the Sunni government there. We put in Shia, which I don't understand.
They had a Ba'athist government, which, you know, at first was Reagan had this policy of containing the Shia power in Iran. So he actually supported the Ba'athist rise and then Saddam Hussein. And then George Bush Jr. reverses this and supports the Shia takeover of Iraq in order to balkanize Iraq. And then they had this thing called the Surge, which is where they just paid the Sunni off, which gave them the finances they needed. They already had the guns. And they declared a de facto Islamic State. And the main resistance that was killing U.S. Fighters in the occupation was this Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
So we paid the guys.
Obama thinks.
I want people to know this. I want them to understand.
We paid their leadership.
We paid for the soldiers. We paid for the terrorist to hurt our sons and daughters.
We left unguarded weapons caches that they just went and took over. And then, but the direct aid comes from Obama. I mean, he was shameless. He gave him the non-lethal aid package, where that's where you get all these white, newly painted, same-year Toyota trucks. Toyota Hiluxes. There is a war called the Toyota Wars between Chad and Libya. This isn't just like, oh, it's a pickup truck. Well, actually, that truck is more cost-efficient and mobile than a lot of armed vehicles and tanks. So it's a weapon of war.
And guess who's banging that guy who's selling all of them? Rihanna. Rihanna was banging the guy selling all the terrorists fucking their Toyota trucks.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen the caravans that these fools all mob in Toyota brand new trucks?
Yeah.
Which is crazy. It's like, who the fuck?
Toyota Hilux.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Look at that. Brand new trucks.
All of them.
Brand new paint, all the same year. Do you think ISIS built those?
Yeah.
Or bought them?
Why would you sell it to them?
They probably came with every Rihanna song built in on it so you could listen to it the whole time. Fucking motherfuckers. So Bush basically puts in the Shiites. Shiites and Sunnis don't get along. I don't know what the difference is. Is it where Jesus is? It's like something.
Well, okay. There's two layers to this. On the superficial layers, there's a theological difference about the lineage of Muhammad. And that's just kind of like Catholics and Protestants fighting over whether or not you need a pope and a hierarchy of bishops or a direct relationship of God. But that's not why they're really fighting. They're fighting the same reasons the Catholics and Protestants really fought, and that's about the religious nepotism, where they only hire from their own tribe. So if the Shia are in charge of government, all the government jobs go to Shia and exclusively. And the same with, you know, back in the day with Catholics and Protestants, it was whether, are you going to send the money to Rome or are you going to keep it in England, you know? And so it's about money and it's about jobs. It's about tribal nepotism. That's the real thing. The little differences in religion are secondary, really. I mean, it started that way, but that isn't it. What they really care about is, well, if you control the government and you're completely tribal, then it's at the expense of everyone else. So there's no civic nationalism. It's all, well, Shia for Shia, Sunni for Sunni, Kurds for Kurds. And the Kurdish faction is another group that splintered off. And you got to realize a lot of these Kurds are refugees from Turkey who was ethnically cleansing Kurds all through the 90s. They pour into Syria and northern Iraq. That's why, how they got there in the first place. And they also have a identitarian philosophy, and they also engage in ethnic nepotism. And the Israelis recognize the Kurds of northern Iraq as a Kurdish state. And because they got 77% of their oil imports from the Kurdish area of Iraq. So when people say the Iraq war is for oil, there was no change in exports and imports of oil to the United States from Iraq. It's a huge change to Israel. They got 77% of all their oil imports in the world from the Kurdish area of Iraq. And this is what they'll try to repeat in Syria. Obama decides, all right, one way to curb the growing Shia influence that wouldn't exist had we not handed Iraq over to them is we're going to bust up their partner in Syria. And they also thought, well, the growing Shia influence is sending weapons to Hezbollah, which is a threat to Israel. Never mind that Israel's also a threat to Lebanon, invaded them a few times. So the corridor for that are these highways that go through Syria. That would be Al-Tanf and Deir ez-Zor, and then another one in Afrin. They all go to Beirut, which is where the U.S. bases are, or were. They're not in Deir ez-Zor anymore, but they were in Rojava, and there's still one in Al-Tanf, which they're pulling from. But so they go into Syria, and they think, okay, we'll arm the Sunni insurgency. And this is proven by our own DIA documents, the Defense Intelligence Assessment, which is where Michael Flynn worked. And that's, you know, he'll get caught up and smeared by Russiagate later, right? But this is the real reason was they were admitted, and Brad Hoff has this on the Levant report, showing that we were fostering a Salafist principality and that this is what we wanted, to topple Assad. They were trying to balkanize Syria, and that they knew and saw it coming. There's also a discussion with the Secretary of State, John Kerry, at the time, had a hot mic where he's saying, well, we want to get boots on the ground, but Congress won't support it. So the way they got boots on the ground were all these proxy forces. And he's openly saying, you know, they've given them the guns and money. We saw the rise of the Islamic State. We were watching, and that's what they wanted. But they thought that the rise of ISIS would force Assad to negotiate, and that he was basically going to be rendered to this little zone around Damascus, and they'd divide up Syria between other different identitarian factions.
Word is, Israel's already selling land rights to Halliburton and all these other people. They're selling rights to a country they don't even have.
Yeah. Well, it really boomeranged, and you can speculate whether this is intentional or just incompetence, but they armed this a lot. But Assad had to move his eastern forces around Damascus because a lot of what's in the east and northeast is mainly desert. He had to sacrifice that and bring all his concentrated forces in to save Daraa, Homs, Damascus, the populated area of Syria. It'd be like bringing the Midwest to the east or west coast. It's to save the majority. And then the Kurds, which mainly lived in the northeast, they decided, hey, they moved out of here, and they kind of declared it as their own. And the U.S. goes and protects that force. Well, this pisses off the Turks because they don't want a Kurdistan just south of Turkey to be able to launch attacks into Turkey because they're already having problems with the PKK and Kurdish factions in Turkey. So they start funding this group called Ahrar al-Sham, which was a Muslim Brotherhood group that Turkey and Qatar backed. As one of the factions in Syria, you've got ISIS, which is coming over from Iraq, and they're secretly being financed by the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and United States. And then you got Jabhat al-Nusra, which has an Israeli sponsor and also a U.S. sponsor. When I say U.S., I mean CIA. You know, they use a network of different companies like Purple Shovel and all these like intermediaries to funnel weapons through the FSA. Which was the Free Syrian Army, which was never moderate, as a sort of a conduit to Jabhat al-Nusra, al-Sham, and ISIS. And there are a bunch of little minor groups, but those are the only three you really need to know.
Dude, those names, right. I would – $1 million. If I said, if you can nail all those names, you'll give you $1 million. I go, it's not happening. It's not happening.
He gets them perfectly. He nails them. Well, he does Japanese names. Those must be a little hard as well.
So I want to get into real quick before we get to this. What I want to talk about is then we're going to get into more about Syria because there's a whole bunch of interesting with that. But I wanted to talk about Benghazi, right? And your thoughts on what Benghazi really is, because I believe it's not about totally about emails, that once again, the media frames it about something, so we focus on that, like the Kavanaugh hearings. You know, they
Well, the dumbest excuse about Benghazi was blaming the whole event on a offensive film on YouTube.
Yeah.
They actually said that.
Yeah. And then we just fell for it. And we're like, yeah, they really hated that. And it was so...
On 9/11.
Yeah, it's so stupid. But basically that this... what was the name of the ambassador in Benghazi?
Stevens. Ambassador Stevens.
Ambassador Stevens.
Oh, that's a simple name.
Was there. And he knew that we were basically training, funding, arming ISIS. And that some believe, some people don't believe, some people do, but believe that Hillary and Obama kind of let him hang so that was a loose end that would not get out because he knew where the bodies were buried and that he had continuously asked for more security and they never sent it to him. And that's part of what is a bigger scandal, another big scandal.
Well, there was even a prior assassination attempt, a bombing at his hotel. So prior to Benghazi going down, they'd already tried to kill Ambassador Stevens. So for them to act like, we were just responding, he had been asking for support, they weren't going to give it to him. He needed to die. And they even caught a ship going through Lebanon from Libya carrying weapons that ended up in the hands of ISIS, whole boatload from Africa. So that was they took a lot of the surplus weapons that Gaddafi had and shipped them over to arm their new proxies in Syria.
And, dude, that's where we get – that's what it's about. It's also – Benghazi's about – you know, they trace where those emails go, and there's one place that they're telling us they can't figure out who it is, but there is a chance it's the Chinese. So at the worst you got is Hillary Clinton was so old and dumb, she let the Chinese hack her thing. But what – might have happened is that she fucking sold secrets to the Chinese for straight cash.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the bullets are from China too.
Yeah, I mean,
the bullets go from China to Romania and Bulgaria, and then they ship them to the U.S. and then ship them back out through Purple Shovel and to the FSA and moderate rebels, and it's just ISIS. So, I mean, I have a video that goes over that.
That's
free.
That's crazy. We're going to get into where they can see all your stuff. That's crazy to me, dude. Like,
So this is the biggest fuck up in it was they start arming the Islamic State in eastern Syria thinking, okay, we're going to grab – they got to get Deir ez-Zor. They have to stop these highways because this whole thing is about curbing Iranian influence, which helps Hezbollah because this is what Israel wants. And once they get enough guns and money, what they do is pour over the border and take over Mosul and Iraq. So Obama has to do Iraq War 3, where we're fucking going back to Iraq to take out the Sunni insurgency that we just armed and paid. And the Iraqis finally, and they couldn't get it done until Trump was president. Trump finally cuts off the CIA flow of weapons in 2017, July, after meeting with Putin. And almost immediately, like within weeks, they start losing everything. And the Peshmerga gets, that's the Kurdish group too, the Peshmerga get wiped out in Iraq by October, completely, they're ISIS free. They pour over into Syria. They were like, get out of Iraq. You're supposed to be in Syria, to vulcanize Syria. Well, they don't like fighting the Russians. So they'd rather fight in Iraq. Assad, under all the pressure, instead of collapsing and negotiating, he turns to Putin, who allies with him because he doesn't want a Sunni corridor going all the way to Chechnya and having that headache in Russia. He's got his own interests. He's not altruistic. Make that clear. So he comes in as the Air Force, and they start slowly winning back territory. And once Trump cut off the funding, a lot of our partners say, well, the U.S. isn't in it. I'm out. So Qatar left. The UAE left. The UAE's more than left. They've already reopened their embassy in Syria. They're totally out of the game. And then the big one was Saudi Arabia with the new crown prince. He saw the writing on the wall and decided to cut loose on Syria and focus on Yemen. Now, invading Yemen is equally, you know, immoral, et cetera.
Awful, dude. It's awful.
It's the worst thing we're doing right now. They're starving to death. But the real reason that the media turned on the prince had nothing to do with Yemen. We've been bombing Yemen since 2011. And this has been there the whole time. We suddenly care about Yemen? No, we're mad at Saudi Arabia because they left Syria. That's what it is. I mean, you look at anybody that's anti-Syrian war, Tulsi Gabbard, down the line, they all smear them as toting for Assad.
That's
which is what
so
Barry Weiss said on the Joe Rogan show, and she didn't even know what the word meant. But yeah, they're all like, oh, you're supporting a dictator and barrel bombs and gas and me. Assad is the only moderate rebels. I mean, they're the moderate Muslims. I mean, they took back Daraa. They took back Homs. They took back Deir ez-Zor. They took back Aleppo. That was huge. And basically, ISIS has been squished into Idlib, bordering Turkey. Turkey still was arming Al al-Sham because Turkey is now not really fighting Syria in Syria. They're fighting the Kurdish faction in Syria, right? So they had different reasons. Now, the U.S. has negotiated with them to say, look, we're going to ensure that there's no Kurdish state. And there really wasn't going to be anyway, because if Turkey's in Afrin, so there's no access to the sea, and then they lost the pipelines because they lost all of Iraq, they're sitting on nothing. They have Raqqa and a few towns, and there's no economic future for them. So they're negotiating, reconciling with the Syrian government to hand back territory peacefully in Rojava, because if they don't, Syria will just give Turkey the green light to come in and starch them. So, which is what they did with Afrin already. There's this little territory slightly west of the Euphrates River called Afrin. It's in the very northwest corner of Syria. Turkey had not invaded because of Syria's strong anti-air defense. And Syria asked the Kurds three times to scat. And they were arrogant enough to say no. And so Syria turned off the AAA. And within like 4 days, Turkey took over the whole area. I mean, Turkey is the second strongest NATO member of NATO.
So Turkey and Syria, they don't get along?
They don't get along, but Turkey hates the Kurds more than anything, because the Kurds will actually attack Turkey, and there's a Kurdish faction within Turkey. So the last thing they want is a large Kurdish state on their southern border that they can, you know, go in, hit, and come back. They don't want that to join up. So they do not want a Kurdish state in Syria. But Erdogan, you know, that's his reason. But he, in the beginning, was trying to topple Syria. They thought the Islamic State was going to take all the territory. But the Islamic State had a mind of its own. It poured into Iraq, so they had to reverse course and push them out of Iraq. And then where they had been winning all the way up until when Trump got elected and Hillary didn't, then the flow of cash and guns stopped. And so they probably would have taken over Syria if Hillary had gotten elected, but she lost. And Trump said, for a while he went along with it, and he did the cruise missile strike, and his base attacked him. And then he realized, what are we doing? We didn't even know who we're backing. He told the CIA to cut funding. They tried to use like UNESCOM and other conduits to finance it. It just wasn't enough. And that, you know, they started gaining victories. And as Assad took Aleppo and freed up more territory, that takes a lot of the troops that were on the defense that he can free up and move to other areas. So it was kind of a exponential growth. Once you free up Damascus, now you have troops from Damascus that can go out and help you with Daraa and so on and so on. And so they started allowing a retreat zone to Idlib, to because you don't want to say, we're going to kill you all. That's a bad strategy, because then you're going to lose a lot of your own in doing so. If you allow them to leave, if you allow retreats, then you can actually gain a lot of territory faster with fewer deaths. You're just going to have a big one at the end. So he pushed them all into Idlib. The great strategy about that is al-Nusra and Ra'al al-Sham and ISIS and all these subcategories don't get along with each other. They're like rival drug gangs.
Yeah.
Right? They all sell drugs, but they'll still, you know, fight over territory. So they're all up in Idlib trying to control the checkpoints and, you know, exploit the population, etc. And they start fighting with each other. Well, after negotiating with Turkey, Ra'al al-Sham lost a major backer, and Qatar had already pulled out. So what happened is the Jabhat al-Nusra front has taken over the entire Idlib area, except for a little squishy part of ISIS. So, and those guys are just, you can't really get rid of ISIS. It's an ideology. Any Sunni that grabs a rifle can say, I'm ISIS, you know. But the Israeli-backed front is really the only one left. And that's why you see Israel attacking Syria, attack Damascus on Christmas Day, and then attack them twice after that, 2 days in a row. But it was really ineffectual. Everything got shot down. The only missile that hit was near the Golan Heights area. They hit a border post and killed four Syrians or something. But out of 60 shots fired from the Mediterranean, they couldn't hit anything, even with Popeye, even with Delilah. And the reason they're forced to fire from so far out is because Russia has equipped Syria with S-300s, and that radar stretches all the way out across Lebanon. So if the Israelis were able to get closer and shoot, they would connect. But from that distance, they're not able to do it, which has really exposed them because they're not going to put boots on the ground.
How many?
And if Israel can't hit from the air, they got nothing.
So, like, how many countries have actually attacked Israel? And how many?
All the neighbors at some point have. Israel's attacked all of them, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable, this whole area. Like, I remember when they went into Lebanon and they got pushed back by Hezbollah. I thought, I'm like,
2006, oh. Yeah.
I remember, I go, holy fuck. Israel
now,
got,
the death count, Israel killed a lot more people, but it was mostly civilians. They started bombing Beirut, which is a Christian area of Lebanon. That got the mass media to turn on them, and that's when they pulled out. But it was hilarious because in the first 3 days, they said they'd taken out all of Hezbollah's long-range missile capacity. 31 days later, they're still getting hit by missiles from Hezbollah. So they don't. The weakness of the West is they can't get skin on the game. Like, well, they'll do a war like in Bosnia or something where we don't lose anybody or minimal. America, if American soil is attacked, then Americans will stomach the casualties. But a lot of these other states, they realize it's a war of choice. So when Israel has a stronger military, well, after they lost only 100 soldiers or so, because they have compulsory military service, that's like anybody's kid, right? So the Oy Vey in Tel Aviv reached a fever pitch, and the people don't want it. Unless they're a complete bully like they are in Gaza and hardly lose anyone or no one, then they'll do it. But the moment like they actually get hit back, they want to quit.
And that's
pretty much across the board, France, England, et cetera. They'll bomb them from afar. But if they start losing planes and soldiers, the public's like, what are we doing? Because there's really no reason to be there anyway.
If the media was actually for real and they talked about how many people, how many soldiers are killing themselves a day here? A day from coming back from that shit. We would be out of everywhere quickly. But our media's full of shit. And I believe that this is the same thing for Israel. I get called every word in the book. I've been called anti-Semitic. I am not at all. I love it.
That's just something. That's such a canard.
You know? Yeah. And I believe that the population of Israel is a lot like the population of the United States in the build-up to the Gulf until the Iraq War, in this propaganda of fucking hate, to demonize a group of people into thinking that they're such scumbags, you don't care what atrocities are being committed against them. And it's just this mental fucking beatdown on this small population. Israel is basically Orange County down to San Diego. And the amount of money that we fucking fund into there and the use of that to fucking militarize that group of people into fucking being okay with what's going on with fucking Palestine. It's just, it's mental warfare, dude. So when you tell me, and this agrees what I'm saying, when they find out that some of their kids have died, they mentally are like, fuck this, they snap back. And that just makes me think that they're just getting pounded by this thing that the Palestinians want all of them dead, blah, blah, blah. And they might want them dead due to what they're doing. But at the end of the day, I think Palestine, in a heartbeat, would take peace and love. You know, we have a street.
They would take it. They'd take it in a second, but you can't colonize people and ask for peace. You can't simultaneously have home demolitions and land confiscation and setting people's kids on fire and having snipers shot over 295 just in Gaza killed. That doesn't even include the West Bank last year since March. That's not even a whole year. 295 and thousands have been shot and maimed. They shoot them in the knees, in the balls, and in the eyes on purpose. They've killed journalists. They've killed medics. They've killed infants. They've tear gassed mothers in tents. Every manner of abuse you can imagine the Israelis do to Palestinians. And they wonder why they hate him. Like, probably because you shot their kids, stole their house. And they allow settlers to just go around with arson, setting buildings on fire. Nothing happens. Cutting down olive trees. It is a really – it's not – if they say it's not apartheid. It's democratic apartheid. Oh, well, that makes all the racism okay. And, of course, there's going to be a reaction to that. Like, of course Hamas wants to kill you.
Yep.
Why wouldn't they?
Well,
that's,
I mean,
because you're colonizing them, because you have a blockade, because you're killing them, like you shoot them from the air. I've talked to many Palestinians, just like teenagers, 15, 16 years old. Just their neighbor was blown to bits. just in a residential area. The Israeli Air Force just came in, takes it out. They're creating terrorists because of their own behavior. And Israel started all of its wars. They preempted the 1967 war. They started the war in 1956. They started the war in 48 by confiscating all the land. And they started the war in 2006 in Lebanon. They invaded. So they, it's not the neighbors didn't all gang up on them.
Yeah.
They started that.
If you don't get along with anybody, it might be you, you know? And it's fucking chaos. It's chaos.
Well, I always tell people, if you treat people like shit, you're going to get a predictable reaction.
Well, how about this, man?
They all got along before that. Jews have been living in Palestine for thousands of years as a minority.
There's Arab Jews, man. There's Arab Jews. How about this, dude?
That's about half of Israel's Arab Jews, yeah.
Yeah. So, dude, how about this? How about the fact that most of our enemies, if we go back and we start looking at what's going on, like controlled opposition, Al-Qaeda, I mean, when we go back, and I know this isn't necessarily what you may believe, but there's a strong argument that Hitler was a Rothschild and that it was controlled shit. So if we go through this history of all the bad guys being on the payroll, what is the possibilities that a faction of Hezbollah, I mean, Hamas is controlled opposition?
Where Israel created Hamas.
Yeah.
Israel, that's a fact. Israel created Hamas to undermine the PLO. And Hamas, they always say, well, Palestine elected Hamas, and Hamas, the Hamas charter, which was changed like 2 days after it was written. There's all this rhetoric that Zionists give, but, you know, the reason that Palestine elected Hamas is because in 2003 and 4, with George Bush's roadmap to peace, the Americans pressured Israel to remove its settlements from Gaza. And all they did was relocate them to the West Bank. So they just left this area, went over here and stole some more land from different Palestinians and set up their houses. And as having a tantrum to that, Israel went into Gaza and flattened it, bombed their university. There's no reason to do that. Bombed agricultural centers, which is where the food is, bombed anything that is processing, cleaning water, sewage, infrastructure. That's what they hit. In response to that, Hamas got elected. And I can tell you this. I mean, Hamas is a militant wing and their armed resistance against Israel. But look at the facts. The West Bank is currently being ethnically cleansed and colonized. Gaza isn't, because Gaza has a resistance government. The PA, I call them the House Arab. They just roll over and allow Israel to continue to build more settlements and steal more land. And people in Hebron are living in fucking cages. Like, they're actually fenced in completely, sealing everything. And Israeli settlers dump their garbage on the fences. It's disgusting. And so you need, at some point, you have to have armed resistance. I mean, you look at any American Indian tribe that still exists.
Dude, couldn't agree more.
Even if they lost the battles, it's the ones that fought that are still here.
Yep. I mean, like, dude, how long have we been told that cops killing people, and then this same-ass media tells us we should give up our rights to guns? That shit's being done on purpose, dude, because there will come a day, man, where people – it's either going to be when people realize we're sending our kids in the banker wars, okay – or when the Chinese start to fucking get crazy. And I know we got to live together, but, I mean, we got to work together. Well, we need each other.
They're already finding a way to take guns away from us. We can't have fully automatic guns, so we still can't compete. When they come at us, we're going to have semi-automatic, and they're going to be fully loaded. There.
I'll tell you something to say to leftists when they are going nuts about the guns and all that.
Yeah.
And I know you have a lot of good arguments already. I'll just give you an extra one. Because a lot of people, if the left used to be concerned about labor, about unions, about rights of workers, now they're all identitarian with ismaholics is what I call them. But the real liberal, not the, you know, nutter SJW or something.
Whatever that is.
That still cares about labor. It still cares about workers' rights. It still cares about negotiating. That's how we got a shorter work hours per week, etc. They need to look up a little thing called the Battle of Blair Mountain. This is where the term redneck comes from, from the red bandanas that the West Virginians coal miners tied around their necks when they fought the U.S. government. This went on for 8 days. They had a war, basically, over Blair Mountain, where the U.S. even used airplanes to bomb. It's the only time in history where the armies used the Air Force against the civilian population.
What, dude?
But it was this and other rebellions where with people with guns fighting the U.S. government, the police force, and at that time it was called the Felton the Baldwin-Felton Detective Agency was kind of like Pinkerton. It was hired spies and spooks to break up labor unions. They had it so bad they used to pay them in script. It wasn't even dollars. They paid them in script, and you could only use script at the company store, right? So it's like, oh, I pay you, and you got to recycle your earnings right back to me because I own the company store, and
oh,
I make
my
you
God.
Mind the coal, child labor, all that. We would not have the labor rights we have today where, no, you can't do that to kids, and no, you can't. You can have an eight-hour day. And that came from armed rebellion, starting with before that, it started in Colorado, really. Same ordeal, rebelling against the coal companies. This is all set up by the tyrant Lincoln, who was in bed with the railroad and coal. You know, he gave them the state sponsorship, state capitalism. But our armed population, whether they lost the battles or not, was so much of a pain and threat because they were armed, especially after World War I, where they had training as well. That's when you get 1921, the Battle of Blair Mountain, the rise of the rednecks, the real rednecks. And when people pick on rednecks, I'm like, hey, rednecks are why you have the labor rights you have.
Dude, that's insane.
And you, I bet you never heard of this. Like, they don't teach you the history of labor.
Nope.
Ever.
Dude,
I mean,
you just
maybe
blew
Howard
my mind.
Zinn or something might write about it, but you're not going to get that in school. You're not going to hear that the Americans got guns, rose up against the corporations, and fucking shot them, killed them. Hatfield was the sheriff in West Virginia. You may hear the Hatfield-McCoy thing, but not know the origin or whatever. But he broke up and killed a lot of these spooks from the Baldwin-Felton and was a hero. And these cowards shot him when he was appearing at court unarmed. And killed him in the courthouse, and that's what kicked this whole thing off. So,
oh,
you ought to learn the origin.
Rednecks,
it's not a slur. It is people fighting for the workers' rights. That's
and they demonized it, huh? They demonized
it. Now rednecks just like a country bumpkin,
yeah.
Cousin fucking racist or something. That's just not what it was.
They demonized it, so nobody wants to know about. That's crazy, mm-hmm. Dude. Holy
Battle of Blair Mountain. Check that out. People are probably looking at now the wiki. Is about, 60% correct. Like, get a book if you really want to know what happened. But
dude, we're going to have you back on talk about that thing, dude. I'm telling you.
I can talk about the labor movement all day, man.
We might have a fucking once a month Ryan Dawson comes in and pops minds like champagne bottles. But
I got a machine gun full of red pills right here.
Yeah, dude. So I want to get into I know we got 5 minutes, Aaron. Aaron's hating the truth. He just got a call from
Syria
person.
Syria had an armed population. Probably ISIS never would have gotten off the ground.
So I want to get into this because I the gun argument I could talk all day. I'm a liberal who is pro gun. I get called a fucking alt right guy because I don't like Hillary and I'm pro gun. Kiss my dick, dude. Everything else, I'm like, you do you. As long as you're not hurting anybody, you do you, man. I don't give a fuck. Well,
they always point to states that don't have guns and don't have a lot of crime, but are. They don't look at the states that don't have guns and do have a lot of crime. I mean, you have to understand the drug war is why a lot of these shootings happen is because of the war on drugs. So the states involved in that chain, you look at Colombia, Venezuela, Brazil, et cetera, Mexico, where you can outlaw guns and you still have triple to six times the homicide death of the United States.
Well, in all those countries.
The United States has had guns for centuries, but we didn't have these mass shootings and stuff till very recently with the introduction of SSRIs and so on.
Yes, dude.
First school shootings, 1989. We've had guns since the beginning.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We've had automatic weapons. Like this rebellion I'm just talking about. These guys fought the government with their guns. There weren't any school shootings in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. It starts in 89. With Prozac and the rest of it. And I really think there's a relationship there that ought to be explored.
Yeah, but they'll never do it, dude.
That's not causation. It's just correlation, but that's all the arguments they have, too. So I think you ought to look into that.
Okay, I want to. We're going to do that. I have 4 minutes left until this fucking oppressive motherfucker shuts down the truth factory, okay? So real quick, Syria is... next to the Balkan Sea, right? So they find all this oil in Qatar, right? Is that where it is? And they got to get it to the water so they can ship it out. Now,
it was natural gas in the Pars fields shared between Qatar and Iran. And they did, there's going to be this long pipeline that went through Syria to the Mediterranean, which you absolutely have to have a port city for. The Maritime Silk Road, people should look that up. It's a must. And that pipeline got shut down because of this war. Syria doesn't really have a lot of oil itself, but you got to get through Syria in order to reach the coast with any oil from below. And there's a lot of oil below.
And Israel and Saudis wanted that pipeline because that pipeline would basically make it easier to export to Europe. And that fucks the Russians because the
Israel and Turkey did not want the pipeline because currently they'd be competing with the oil that they send to Europe.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought Israel wanted it as part of this. Let me ask why.
Not only that, they're getting oil and gas from the Caspian Sea from Azerbaijan. It goes to Turkey, and then it goes through the Mediterranean through Israel rather than the Suez Canal in order to go east to China. So Israel profits enormously from being a glorified middleman in the flow of oil from the Caspian to the Chinese. Now, they don't have a direct route because guess how you'd have to do that? You'd have to build a pipeline through Iran. So the real threat that Iran is to Israel is Iran is the access point to get oil to China and India and everybody else in the East, which is by far the largest market, is by building pipelines through Iran. So they have to have sanctions and rules against that because that would break up the current monopoly that Turkey and Israel enjoy. Well, they're not going to tell you that.
If you look at the map, I got a video it's so much easier. Too. If you look at the map, you can tell about
why is Russia back in Syria? Because I thought Russia didn't want this pipeline either.
Oh, there you go. See that? See Azerbaijan?
Yeah.
It goes straight to Turkey, down the Med, through the Israeli pipeline that ironically Iran built for them prior to 1979. But then you can see the rest of the Caspian. There's Tehran right under the middle of it, right?
Wow.
So, right there, and you can
I have a video about the pipelines. It's got 500,000 views. I think it's called Why is the U.S. Really in Syria? I had a non-creative title, but that'll explain why we went into to Libya as well. So if you watch that video, I'll give it to you, and you can link it in the description.
Well, that has to do with
it's
the
real story. It's animated. Somebody else animated. It's really good. But you'll see that was a major incentive as well.
Well, Ryan, you are the you're amazing, dude. You're amazing.
Russia, real quickly to answer your question before it ends, Russia does not want that Sunni Wahhabi faction to have a corridor all the way up to Chechnya, because they have their own internal problems with the Chechen region of Russia, which is full of extremist Muslims with a mixed motivations of why they're rebelling against the state. But suffice to say, they don't want to lose their only access to the Mediterranean, the Tartar base, and they don't want a Sunni corridor to reach Chechnya. That's Russia's main motivation.
Wow.
And I think they're also thinking they want to revamp Syria's energy sector post-war. They'll be the man because they're not going to let it go into the U.S. sphere of influence, right? So it was do or die for Russia.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy, dude. Wow. Ryan Dawson, blowing minds, popping minds like champagne bottles. Ryan, where can they find you again? What's your YouTube and your anything you want them to check out?
Yeah, ANC Report. That's the anti-neocon report. Okay. ANCReport.com will have it. I got to get some of that caveman coffee.
Yeah.
I got to get my energy like you did. You're off the wall, man. I want some of that. I don't know if they'll ship it to Japan, but I'll try.
I go hard in the paint, homeboy, and now I'm going to go sleep after this. Great show. You're the best, Ryan. We're going to schedule once a month if you got time. Just come here and just drop bombs on us. That redneck shit blew my mind.
That shit was dope.
Let's do a show on that if you want.
Yeah,
are you looking at that? Did you start looking at that?
That's the next thing.
Battle Flare Mountain.
We're going to do it next.
Colorado. Yeah.
All right,
and
Ryan.
You'll see how the government was essentially pressing the rights of labor forcefully. And it's because we had guns that we could stand up to them.
Well, dude, that was another great show. Ryan, we'll see you soon. Always stay in touch. You're the best, buddy. And we were supposed to do your podcast. I just got slammed next week. So anytime you want me to come on, I'd love to do yours too, dude.
Yeah, man. We'll do that.
You're the best,
Bolton,
buddy.
Let's go.
Say hi to everybody in Japan. Great show. Aaron, fuck you. The truth is going to get out. All right, guys. Bye, everybody.